Civic City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors Business Meeting come to order January 13th, 2006. It is 5 p.m. We are meeting virtually and in person at the Kiawanda Community Center Faye Jensen Room. I'll now read the rules of conduct. All persons in attendance will remain quiet during the course of the meeting unless called upon to comment. Refrain from any behavior that disturbs, disrupts, or otherwise impedes the orderly conduct of the meeting, to include shouting, booing, hissing, etc. Refrain from creating, provoking, or participating in any type of disturbance involving unwelcome physical contact. Be asked to leave the room to conduct side discussions and refrain from any speech of a political nature. Okay, we'll call the roll call. Director Anderson?
Here.
Director Strotska?
Here.
Director Dole?
Yes.
And Director Shoemaker?
Here.
And I'm Director Donahue, the chair. Okay, we'll move on to the minutes of December 9th, 2025 business meeting. Did anybody notice any additions or corrections that need to be made? Hearing none, I entertain motion.
I move that the minutes of the December 9th, 2025 business meeting be approved as presented.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the December 9th, 2025 business meeting minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Our next item, number five, is our financial report. Accounts payable for December 1st, December 15th, December 17th, and December 31st. Are there any questions or comments about the accounts payable for those 4 days?
I have a question, comment.
Director Dole.
It appears as though that the December was about 100 grand over September, October, and November. And it looked like UV lamps, geode receiver and holder, the Honda purchase, and the Woods lift station project might have been the contributors to that $100,000 more than September, October, and November.
I think that is correct. We bought that ground-penetrating radar system that was not previously accounted for in our budget, but with all the underground fiber optic work going on in town, it's already paid off. The Honda purchase was another big item. Woods Lift Station is another big dollar item. Yeah.
Question I have, the budget for the lift station improvement was at $260,000, and we're at $62,000 year to date. And I just wondered, in that specific category, how much more maybe the Woods lift station is going to need, and what other stations might have been on the docket for improvements.
Well, I think that accounts for our Cindy lift station and our Roger lift station upgrade done earlier in the fiscal year.
Okay.
So those two have been done. Woods is bigger pumps, bigger horsepower pumps. We've got the pumps, we've got the control panel, we've got the new control system. We've got the parts have all arrived. All we need to do now is, with the help of our electrician, is get that new equipment installed.
Okay.
So I'm quite sure that we'll be well within budget, but I think some earlier projects have contributed to what has been spent in that line item so far.
The UV lights, is that like every 6 months, every year? It just depends. I didn't see any allocated direct expense to UV lights in the budget.
Yeah.
Other than maybe combined in a category.
Well, you know, it is a maintenance cost, and we should do a better job of identifying that as its own individual budget item, because when we replace the lamps, we replace all of them. And one bank, our primary bank holds 30 lamps, and they're $400+ a piece. Now, we should get 4 years worth of runtime out of those lamps. So other than having a lamp fail prematurely, which we should be able to either get a prorated price for or a complete replacement for, they're under warranty if they fail within 36 months. So other than that, every 4 years is when we're going to have our big lamp expense. Okay. We need to recognize that at the beginning of the budget cycle, that this is our year for to replace all the lamps. And we should be listing that separately so you guys can follow that a little bit better. But right now, it's just being absorbed in the our operating fund. And in this case, it would be the operating fund for the wastewater side.
Are there any other comments about accounts payable? I would then entertain a motion for those 4 dates.
I move that we approve, this is for, the accounts payable for December 1st, December 15th, December 17th, and December 31st as presented.
I'll second.
So I have a motion and second to approve the accounts payable for the 4 time periods in December. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, under item 5B, our general ledger for fiscal year 25-26, are there any comments? Find anything else, Dan?
No.
You're pretty good at that.
No, I have something that'll come up later, but it's not.
Okay. Do you, anyone here have any comments about the general ledger?
No.
Are we within budget so far? I mean, we're only 3 weeks into the year, but I just want to check.
Well, as a budget as a whole, we are. I think we're running close to exceeding a line item or two. But we are substantially under in other line items. We are should be on target as a whole, but I am aware that we've got a couple of individual line items where we are maybe close to exceeding, and we likely will by the end of the year.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's move to item 6 then, manager's report.
Did we have a motion to approve that, or did we need
to? No, we don't have to.
Oh, we don't have to. Okay. All right. Manager's report. It was a little lengthy this month, and I apologize for that, but a lot going on. System development charges were up to 4 and 3 for the year. As you all know, we generally anticipate 10. We did have a 5th water and a 4th water come through since just this week. So we're about halfway, which is kind of good because we're about halfway, right?
Yeah.
So we'll.
I have a question for you. Would that by any chance be that Goody Wagon that I saw by the fish company?
Nope. This is for just development of undeveloped lots.
Okay.
Yeah. Unaccounted for water is staying fairly consistent. We did have quite a few water leaks last month. 3 of them were caused by contractors that did hit our lines, which were precisely located, by the way.
Okay.
But we had, I think somebody, one or two of you saw the guys on that extremely nasty day that we had a water leak down on River Avenue. And that was a pretty good sized one. You know, the ones that a contractor may, the types of water leaks a contractor may cause, it's hard to attribute our unaccounted water very much to that, because as soon as they hit the line, they call us, we're down there, we haven't been pouring water on the ground for very long. Yeah. So, but we did find a leak in one of our PRV valves, our pressure regulating valves, and it was a pretty significant leak. It's not going to account for all of this, but I'm hopeful that it'll account for a portion of it. I will say that the best time to do leak detection is when it's not raining outside. Yeah, you know, very sensitive acoustics, and falling rain when it hits the ground sounds a lot like a water leak. So this week we are we've got a crew doing leak checks or looking for leaks this week, because this is a good week to do it, and they haven't found any, but they're looking.
And they get more practice on that equipment.
Well, and it is more as much art as science. The people that are really good at this have been listening and looking for leaks for a long time, and it does take some experience to really get proficient at it. But our guys are getting pretty good, and but we are continuing to look. But I am hopeful that PRV leak that we discovered will account for at least a portion of that.
Where was that PRV?
I want to say it was River Avenue and Elderberry. Let's see, I'm trying to... We have five of them, and they're all on corners. And so...
That's okay.
Yeah, it was up by... And when I mean River Avenue, what I'm talking about is River View.
Yes.
So up there we have a PRV vault, and the body of it had just pitted and rusted through, and so we have replaced that portion of the valve. You know, these pressure regulating valves are quite complicated. They've got multiple valves, multiple reliefs, multiple sensing lines. And they're pretty elaborate pieces of equipment, and the type of thing that when they need a repair, we need a contractor that knows what they're doing to come out and repair that and to get everything dialed back in. But we do hope that will account for at least a portion of our unaccounted for water. Of course, we'll have to wait till next month to know for sure, but it was a pretty significant leak. And of course, these PRV vaults have a drain, and that drain. Tom wants me to.
Oh, that was me. I didn't realize I was doing that.
Okay. I purposely haven't joined because I'm afraid it's going to cause noise problems.
You turned yourself off. Excellent.
Okay. moving on.
Before you move on.
Sure.
The contractors that damage or cause leaks, do they get a bill for that, or is it kind of a judgment call?
Well, it's kind of a judgment call. If our locate is imprecise, well, then we kind of blame ourselves. That wasn't the case this time, but all three of these leaks happened. Well, two of them for sure happened on Shore Drive. And Shore Drive has the services or thin wall poly, which probably should be on one of our next project lists to replace. They broke this line just hitting it with a shovel, a hand shovel. This was not a backhoe. This was not anything like that. And just the shovel with that thin wall poly, as old as it is, was enough to cause the leak. So it wasn't them going too fast. It wasn't them being careless. It wasn't them using their big implements. this was hard to blame them because they were hand digging this when the line broke, and usually we want them to hand dig when they get close to the pipe, but typically that's not enough to break a line, and in this case it cracked that thin wall poly that has been used on the service lines on that particular street on two separate occasions. So to answer your question, I don't think we'll charge them for that, but if we had measured it, located it precisely, and they just used the backhoe to dig too deep before they converted over to hand shovels, we probably would consider doing that.
Okay.
And we have done that with other contractors in the past. The South Tillamook Emergency Volunteer Corps, which is the folks that provided the emergency supply shed that we've got at the 100K, have approached us for some additional assistance. They are interested in, well, they're trying to establish emergency radio communications. And I'm talking about handheld GMRS radios, because they feel as though our ability to reach other areas north and south of the coast and the points east is going to be a crucial communications link in the event of a true emergency, like a subduction zone event, where communities on the coast are going to be isolated from the rest of the world for probably maybe as long as a couple of weeks. They have one signal. There's a signal path that they have not been able to establish. And they asked if they could come up to the 600K and do a couple of radio checks. They did that. They have concluded with a tower up there on our property at the 600K those communications can be achieved. Now, going to be a board decision. They will have a proposal, a written proposal that we will put in the board packet for our February meeting, and some representatives of the organization will be here as well to pitch this proposal to us and to answer any questions. I can tell you that what they want to do will have zero operational effect on us. If there may be a couple of times a year they need to go up and check the battery, because it's going to be a solar powered repeater up there, and those couple of times a year if they give us a call, we're happy to escort them up there.
Yeah, they need an escort.
I'll let the board at our next meeting read the proposal. I'll allow them to make their pitch to the board. It's the board's decision. I can tell you that I will say that I don't have a huge opinion about this either way. If we can help with emergency preparedness, I think it's always a good thing for an entity like us to do that. It's one of the highest points around, and the hill that they would like to put the repeater on is the obstruction to those emergency communications that are currently in place. Now, they're talking about putting it in one corner of the property. I can tell you it'll have no adverse impact on our operations at all. So,
would you be so kind when you put that packet together next time to have maybe a plot map of how big the property is we have, and what about where they're going to want to put it, so we can compare it to what they have in mind when they make their presentation?
Sure.
Maybe a few pictures.
We can do that. They'd like to put it in one corner of the property. It's fairly, it's not,
I do got one question.
Yeah.
Does that in any way, shape, or form allow them for permanent easement for future projects that don't concern the city?
Nope. There won't be any easement made on this. Because, what's that?
Strictly by battery?
Solar panel that requires a battery.
I'll be darned.
Yep, and that's to ensure that we have communications year round.
Electricity, yeah, that makes sense.
No, there won't be any easement related to this unless we really wanted to push it. They will not be accessing this on this facility unescorted. And we own half the road. The other half of the road is owned by another property owner who I've already talked to, and they don't have any problem with it either, just giving them periodic access. We're talking about 2-3 times a year tops. Now, if we feel like we wanted to have that just to make sure that, you know, we've got all potential agreements in order and agreed to, but I don't think it's going to be one of these things where we need an easement. For example, with us, you know, whether it's a step system or any number of things, we need unobstructed access to that property 24/7. And we have easements in place to give us that legal right and that permission. This is a different thing. It won't lead to any additional claims. It won't lead to any additional infrastructure. This is just going to be an antenna with a radio, a solar panel, and a battery pack. And you know, but we can, if the board has concerns about that, we'll have an opportunity to address those concerns with Dave Sears, who's the president of the organization. And we may get another rep here. Their technician that knows about their radio communications, knows about their frequencies, knows about their successes and failures in trying to develop the network that they're trying to put together. That person will probably be here to answer questions as well. Gary, you know Gary.
Yeah. I would suggest that we have, when we start thinking about signing papers, I think we should have our attorneys at least a brief consult to see what they think. If we decide to say okay after the presentation, and proper paperwork to keep us away from any liability things. You know, we get a big windstorm, and that thing falls over and hits our $600K and damages it, or infrastructure, there's got to be some liability stuff in there.
Well, just like the supply shed, I believe that we need to have a signed agreement between both parties.
Good.
And but, you know, this is a proposal, and we'll see what they have to say. As I say, this is a board decision, and we'll have more information to base any thoughts or any conclusions or opinions on at our February meeting. So I wanted to put it in the manager's report, just give people a heads up that I've been approached. There is some interest in doing this. And they are planning to make a formal proposal to the board. Also, we purchased a used car, another vehicle to add to our fleet. Unlike most of our vehicles, this is a sedan. If you have read the manager's report, I tried to explain why the sedan made sense for us. And, you know, I hope I remember to include a picture of it in the board packet as well, too. So we're going to, one of our requirements was we wanted it to be painted white, like the rest of our vehicles. We'll put a couple of door stickers on it with our logo as soon as we get some weather that will cooperate with us to do that. This is something we needed as just a gopher type of utility type of vehicle that, you know, if I want to go look at go check out a job site. We have a water leak. I want to swing by and see how the guys are doing. If I need to run out to Horn Creek, if I need to go up to the 600K. I've been using my personal vehicle to do this for 4 years now. And I know Rochelle, for all her in-town errands, whether it's a run to the post office, has had to use her personal vehicle. So this will be something that will be shared. If somebody needs to go to a short school that's out of town, we'll ask them to take this vehicle instead of taking a utility vehicle out of service for the duration of the trip. Of course, our utility vehicles will not get nearly the gas mileage this does. So
makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and you know, it took a while for us to find the right car at the right price.
Right.
We had to stay below 25. we knew it was going to be a used car, but we wanted a high quality used car with low miles. And I think we found the vehicle. And other than the fact that when we drove it home from Salem, somehow we ran over a screw. It's been working very well for us. So, but that was something I wanted to tell the board and make sure the board understood the reasoning behind the decision.
Does it have some kind of a warranty on it?
Yeah. It's still got some of the original warranty, and it's I think it's only like 5 months or 5,000 miles. It is a used car, but it does have some warranty left on it.
It's not that old,
and of course we check the Carfaxes and all, everything that anybody would do when they buy a used car. But we think it's going to work well for us. Sometimes I leave things on here twice just because I just want to the board to absorb it a little bit more and to think about it a little bit more. I've repeated the North Broughton Water Main Improvement Project on here. We are working with Parametrics to identify the precise scope of work. We need to nail down the scope of work in order for them to put together the first 30% set of drawings and to put together their engineer's estimate of probable cost, which is going to be until we actually get bids on the project, that will be our best indication of how much this project is expected to cost. I will say with the Ruppel project, the engineers overestimated by about $300,000. So, it'll probably be a conservative estimate, but until we get a bid, the engineers' estimates are best indication of what to expect in terms of what this project will cost. This will be more than Ruppel, and a big reason why is because we have to do more paving. And paving is very expensive. So,
just out of curiosity on that, I emailed Rochelle earlier and I said, where is there something in the budget that covers this? And she clued me in that it was currently it's in 005-001-380-110 new construction, except for engineering.
Yep.
The engineering costs have their own budget line item.
They do. And it's the engineering that will be the initial cost. Once the engineering is done, we get into the construction phase, and then we have construction costs.
Point of order, I just want to mention for the record, we have Jeb is online right now, and I'm guessing at about 5:25.
Okay. The only other thing I wanted to mention from the manager's report is the generator enclosure project. This was stalled a bit, waiting for the third and last concrete pad to be poured. Luann, as you know, this is the one at the 300K. You know, with scheduling with our contractor, weather and other factors delayed the pouring of that pad by approximately 3 to 4 weeks.
I do have to say, I did see some of those guys were out there working. It was raining pretty hard too.
Yeah. But yesterday the tough shed went up. Mm-hmm. That is our last enclosure, our last generator shack to go up. By the end of next week, we should have the doors installed. And as soon as I get past these permitting delays with the county, we'll move forward with the electrical work. So we are making good progress now that I'm not waiting for a contractor to be a general contractor on this project. We have made quite a bit of progress. All that is left now, once the doors are put on, is the electrical work, the mechanical work to vent the generator exhaust gases outside of the shacks, and then to place the generators in the shacks, get them out of our shop buildings, and have them where they need to be, already plugged in the event of a power outage, which means that any downtime from our customers is going to be greatly diminished. And
so all we would do is have to start them up?
All we'll have to do is start them up and manually transfer the transfer switch from utility power over to generator power. Once we figure out if the local improvement district is approved for the Ridge Road area or not approved, we will know whether we have a fourth location to do, which is our 100K reservoir that's down on the north side of Cape Kiwanda Drive as you're leaving town. That one, whether the local improvement district funds it or whether we fund it, that one will be an auto transfer, because when you lose power at the 100K, you have no, the pumps don't run, and nobody on that ridge has water. You know, our other customers with our reservoirs, there is a period of time where they'll still have water, but just, you know, in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, it's raining sideways, we've got a community-wide power outage. No more having to one at a time hook these up, haul them up to the site, back them into place, get them all hooked up before you have to drive back to the shop and grab the next generator to go to the next site. So not only is this going to free up a lot of much-needed room in our shop buildings, this may prevent us from having to add another shop building, which we've talked about in the past, because now we'll have much more room in our shop buildings for other vehicles and other equipment. But just far easier, far quicker recovery to make sure customers, any interruption to service is held to a minimum in an after-hours emergency. And it's really safer for our staff, too. Within 6 weeks, we should have these projects done, and we can finally close this chapter on this. We've been talking about this project for 2 years now. So we are almost at the finish line, and close to, you know, getting everything buttoned up and these buildings doing what we wanted them to do for us. So
I have a question on the North Bruton Water Main.
Yeah.
So I think this is a project that's going to affect virtually everybody in the community, because sooner or later everybody drives down that road and the tourists and everything do. So I think it would be beneficial to have you speak at some of the community groups and explain this, maybe the chamber, and you're already going to chamber sometimes, I guess, the Nesco Women's Club, there may be others.
And when were you planning on starting this?
Well, here's what I'll say is we're planning to start it late summer of this year.
Okay, I would also suggest that you speak at the Dorymans Association in the weekend of Memorial Day weekend, it's that Saturday. There will be 80 people there.
Oh, okay.
They're a Doryman, you know, and they're going to have questions about accessibility.
Yeah, and like Rupel, I intend to...
Do you think of any others?
There's probably others I'd have to think about, it, though.
Well, and like Rupel, I am, you know, despite our attendance woes, I am planning to have a public meeting to discuss this project as well.
But I think if you went to some of these meetings, you know, met with the fire department and invite all the volunteers to be there so that they know. NESCO meets here every month, except in the summer. Chamber meets, Dorian meet. So you have a captive audience. I know it's a ways down the pike, but a lot of these groups, it's hard to get on their agenda because they have other speakers lined up and stuff. So I guess it would be my suggestion that we start contacting some of these groups and see if you can get on their agenda and spread it out maybe a little bit so it doesn't impact you like your boom, boom, boom.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Some time for you to put a presentation together.
Well, and I'll want to reach out to so they can put me on the agenda.
Yes.
And
no problem with Dorian. I write the agenda.
Oh, okay.
So we'll put you.
Well, good. Well, you owe me an agenda.
Oh, come to think of it.
So Tom can get you on that.
Yeah.
Maybe Dan can help get you on something of the fire department that's going on. I can get you on NESCO, and you already have contacts with the chamber. So when do you think you would be ready to do a presentation?
What I want to do is be sure first, and we do still have some time, but what I want to do is be sure first that our construction time frame is going to be accurate. Because here's what I'll tell you guys. If the construction on Broughton extends too late in the fall, we're not going to get paving done. And we're not going to want to leave that road chewed up all winter long because we'll have people upset at us. We'll have to maintain all those road cuts the whole time, which means we're going to be adding continually adding gravel and compacting gravel. If there is a chance, and it's funny because I told Tom, you know, I wish we had decided that this was our next project 6 months ago. Because if we were to be in a position to do this in the spring, well, we know we're not going to run into asphalt limitations at that point in the year. We won't have trouble with the paving part of this project. If it looks to me like we're not going to be able to wait until after summer, the tourist season, to start construction because we're not going to make our window to have get the paving done, there's a chance that I'm going to decide to put this off another until the following spring. I'm talking about a year from this spring.
Yeah.
Because we do not want to be in a position where people, businesses, customers are mad because their road is chewed up for 6 months.
The thing is that road,
or if we have problems,
floods
finding a contract
twice a year usually.
Yeah.
And if there's open, any asphalt that's open, you're just going to have a trench.
Yeah.
So
it's a mess.
I can actually see this going another year before you get started.
Well, mainly because we don't want to impede traffic and cause chaos to this extent during the height of tourist season. And we don't want to do it in the dead of winter for those very reasons.
We won't be able to asphalt.
So once I know, and I need to have more communications with our engineers, I need to have more communications with the local paving companies, and there's three in our area. I mean, you know, furthest away probably being Lincoln City. But they all kind of shut down at the same time because, you know, when you're in the middle of winter, you can't pave, so they don't make products. And I don't want to, I would rather wait instead of try to get too much done too quickly and then find out we can't finish the job before winter gets here.
I agree with that.
And not only that, but I think we need to allow ourselves a little latitude for contractor performance, regardless of who it is. Right?
I agree there.
Because contractors don't always complete jobs when the contract says they're supposed to be completed, as we all know.
Yes, we went through that.
I mentioned to John when we were discussing this, a way to help get the energy you need to finish this on time is to add contract bonuses. Like if you get it done 2 weeks before the time frame, well, there's
an incentive.
Yeah, like a 5 or 10% incentive of what the whole.
That's actually
something we can, with budget, we have the money to do it. It's critical this gets done.
And it would probably save us
weather
if they run over anyway.
And we know that there's penalties that will be included because we've all been through the Ruppel project, but
that's it.
But
I don't know why you have to keep bringing up Ruppel.
Well, I want things to go smoother, and I'm sure that our customers do as well.
I know.
So, before I meet with anybody, I want to see how the time frame's looking. I want to talk to some of the local paving companies to find out exactly what a typical year, when is their cutoff point?
Okay.
Is it the 1st of October? Is it mid-October? Is it the 1st of November? All of these things are going to have a bearing on our time frame for construction. And I want, before I meet with groups to talk to them about the project, I want to be able to give them a clear idea of the construction window. And I will meet with those groups, but I need to have a little more certainty about the construction time frame before I do.
I have a question even before you get to that point of the engineering's estimate. Assuming they're putting a price tag on this. And I mentioned before that one account, new construction, that's got $100,000 in it. And I can see paving costing $100,000.
I think paving is going to cost $250,000.
So
I agree with that.
Now that comes to, well, do we wait a year and we rebudget for that project? Or are we going to take it from another bucket? Or?
Well, right now, all the work and all the cost is engineering related, which I think that our current budget, I think we have a mechanism and we've accounted for that. We're going to be approving a new budget in just a few months. And that budget is where we can allot some additional funds for the construction phase. Ruppel engineering plus construction was around $550,000.
Sounds about right.
But there was almost no paving involved with that. I did get a paving estimate for Ruppel as part of that job, just because there was a period of time when the homeowners found out we weren't going to repave, that they kind of wanted to get together amongst themselves, see if they could come up with the money collectively. So to help them with that effort, I did get an estimate to pave Ruppel. Ruppel, I believe, is 1,200 feet of pipeline we put in there, and the paving estimate was $225,000. Broughton, we're talking about twice the distance on Broughton. So we can't underestimate what the paving is going to do. It's going to be a significant part of the cost of this project. Now, I don't know what the engineer is going to come back with, but based off of who the winning bidder was on Ruppel and the cost to pave Ruppel, I think counting engineering, this is going to be a $750,000 job. And we do have the funds to pay for that. They just haven't necessarily been put in the correct boxes yet. But right now it's engineering. They're refine the scope of work, capture the scope of work, put together a 30% submission on the drawings, which is usually what they start at. They'll go from 30 to 60 to 90. Sometimes they just go straight from 30 to 90% design. But that, as well as the cost estimate, and not to mention the fact that Parametrics is going to be the folks that help us put together the bid documents, the specifications, all that stuff. So we're spending money right now on this project on the engineering side. We've really just gotten started. But I will speak to those groups, and probably what I'll do is I'll give you and Tom a phone call, have you go down the litany of the groups I should call, if you know a contact or a phone number, and I will make it a point to address all of those groups individually. I will say I addressed this with the Chamber of Commerce at the meeting they had last week. Now, it wasn't a huge turnout, you know, so some people come to these meetings in 1 week, but they don't make it the next. I will continue to remind people at the Chamber of Commerce meeting as well about this project. Chief Ader is usually at these meetings. Talk to him a little bit about what he'd like to see in the way of fire hydrants and stuff in these areas with the new. So, you know, we need to partner with them. They can help us to determine what they would like to see in terms of number and location of fire hydrants. The network is beginning to develop. So,
okay. Well, thank you.
Yes, that's all I've got for the manager's report.
All right, thank you, John. Okay, item 7, unfinished business. Item A, we briefly discussed this, I believe, last meeting, testing of privately owned backflow assemblies update. Dan, where are we at, buddy?
Yeah, we actually met today.
Yeah. It was tough trying to get a meeting during the holiday portion of it. But as John and I discussed today, we've focused on a path that we feel is going to be amenable, as amenable that it could ever be. And John hopes to have something officially put together for the next meeting.
Yeah, I think we made good progress today. Certainly, I think we landed on an approach that you and I think are come to consensus is the best solution. But I would like to summarize our proposal to address this issue. Maybe, you know, just a single page write-up I'd like to put together for the board and put in the next board packet. And Dan and I will pitch this officially to the board at our February meeting, if that's okay. We just met this morning, So we're not quite ready to present our recommendations to the board at this meeting, but by our February meeting, we will be ready. So it's just kind of an update on that.
Thank you. Next item is item B, Authority Manual Manager Annual Review Form Update. Luann and I met here a couple days ago, and we amazingly, I got chicken scratchings here right at the moment, but I'll have it reformed in on electronic form, where what comments or wording that we're going to delete will have a strike through, and new language or parentheses or whatever will be in a highlighted form before the next meeting, and have a workshop in February. And what I am considering is we are second Tuesday of the month is our regular meeting, and I'm thinking that the following Tuesday we can have about a one-hour meeting if we can find a place for it, if that works for everybody.
You're talking about the Tuesday after the Tuesday business meeting in February?
Yes.
February 20th. That would be February 20th.
Okay. That works for everybody.
Book that.
Wrong month, sorry.
Because I think it's going to be like the 17th.
17th, sorry. Wrong month.
17th.
Okay. February.
Meeting is what?
Tom and I went over this, and it went pretty quickly. I mean, we weren't, the form is a good form. It's just we did some weird smithing and some things like that. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be a long, long workshop.
No, that's why I'm only suggesting an hour.
Yeah. You know,
if we did that, we worked on it about 2.5.
Yeah.
And I was pretty amazed we actually got clear through it.
Yeah.
So what time are you thinking?
Same time, 5 p.m., if we can.
I'll call and reserve space here if that's what you'd want to do.
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to use that because I want the electronic form I put up on the screen that will face this way. It's a workshop, so there's no action items.
Yeah, and I do think, and I did mention it to Tom too, I think that probably when we get something put together, we should at least have our HR people look at it.
Yeah, just a smart idea.
I don't, you know, I don't mean for them to go in and change everything, because I think we've got it pretty much together, but probably just a good idea for a professional to look it over. And we have HR solutions that are...
Or answers or whatever.
Yeah, that we're actually...
Yeah.
Paying for some work for them anyway, aren't we?
I'm thinking they just need to make sure that all what we're doing here is up to most,
right,
the common HR practice.
Right, and that's what I mean, yeah, just to have them look it over.
Well, unless I'm mistaken, one of the things that spurred this effort was some feedback they gave us on the form.
Right, right.
So, you know, following up with them.
I just think it's a good idea that we just have them, you know, or I can talk to them or Tom can talk to them and just follow up, you know, see what they think about it.
Sure, sure.
What was that, 17th?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's move on to new business. Resolution 2601, Trail Use Immunity Opt-In. John.
So, you know, I know you've read my primer on this and the manager's report. I provided an additional explanation of what the issue is and what's going on that was written up by SDAO. Just to help explain this issue with more detail and more clarity. I don't think everybody was on the board when this happened, but I think a lot of us remember when we closed the trail system because of a court decision that basically nullified Oregon's recreational immunity laws for public agencies like us. As expected, the Oregon legislature responded to that and passed a bill to restore that recreational immunity. But unfortunately, it did not restore it for us, and I didn't realize that, and we may have opened the trail system a little earlier than we maybe should have. Because the bill that was passed was only for municipalities. It wasn't for local governments or special district type of governments. So now they've put an amendment out to the bill that does extend these protections to special districts like us. But the strange thing about us is we have to officially opt in for those protections by declaring it via resolution or ordinance. And that's what the ordinance I put together is intended to do. I will say that I used a template that SDAO put together for that very purpose to draft the resolution I drafted. So it looks like I did more work than I really did there. Well, I just customized it for us.
I'm not supposed to admit that.
I know.
But, just take credit for it.
You know, it's nice of SDAO to put together a template for us to achieve this goal.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. And if you've read the resolution, you read the introductory statement that I included with the resolution, I think you guys know what this is about. You know why it's in front of us. And I'm predicting that nobody here will have a problem adopting this as our first resolution in 2026.
I would like to make a comment. I think I mentioned it to you in passing when we discussed this the other day. But we now have a new Oregon revised statute that deals strictly with us as a special district. And I think that should be on our signs on the trail.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Even if it's just in fine print?
Yes.
Yeah.
Under the sign?
Just put a sticker on there or something.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we have signs up right now that basically, and this was an addition when we reopened the trail because we didn't used to have any signage. But our insurance agent recommended that we put up the basically use right. at your own risk. And you know, that might be the appropriate sign to add the ORS number that applies. I will say that I have received some feedback from the community that wants us to add another sign to all the access points to this trail system that says foot traffic only. Because what we're seeing is that we've got people on horses, we got people bikes. On e-bikes,
yeah.
And that was never supposed to be what the trail was intended for. In fact, our recreational
management plan,
thank you, Tom, with BLM stated that this was going to be a foot traffic trail only. And if anybody has read the big sign next to the skateboard park, it flat out says that too. But we are getting some feedback from members of our community that people are doing more than just accessing those trails on foot. And because of that, I am recommending we add an additional sign that says foot traffic only. Doesn't mean that people are going to pay attention. Doesn't mean we have the resources to police it. But what it does mean is that at least we've attempted to drive that point home.
Well, if there becomes an issue, you know,
yeah, there's going to be some people that gripe about that, I think.
Oh, there'll be people that gripe about it, but you're going to have people that are griping on both sides
both
of it.
Sides.
Yeah, the biggest thing is well,
maybe
the
you
enforcing
mentioned
of
it.
I doubt it's going to be enforced, but
you think that's
legally, from a standpoint, I can understand putting that sign up there.
Well, yeah,
and there's no doubt that the reason that they wanted this to be foot traffic only is because, I mean, you know some of these mountain bikers, they're adrenaline junkies. They're ripping through these trails. What happens when they come around a corner and there's a family war
or young
children
camping,
right in the middle of the trail?
Right. Homeless camps.
You know, so, I mean, I
well,
think...
And horses, they just ruin the trails. Yeah. I mean, they're just ruined. Like down at by Bob Strom there, those horses just...
They chew it up.
Yeah.
They chew it up. And you know, this allowing or not emphasizing this as a rule, I think increases our maintenance costs. It increases our liability, or the chances of somebody getting hurt on one
right.
of these trails.
That's probably the thing.
And so we're looking, in addition to the addition of the ORS that you mentioned, Tom, I think we're going to put a second sign below the first one that says exactly that.
Good. I think you should bring this up to the chamber. That way the word for sure will get around town.
Yeah,
I'd be curious to see what the sheriff has, if he's going to support that.
Yeah, well...
This resolution is an action item. This is administrative stuff, so we can figure that out. Next time around, you give us a report how things were received.
Sure.
Why don't we go ahead and I'll entertain a motion to take care of this resolution.
I'll make a motion that we adopt Resolution 2601, Trail Use Immunity Opt-In.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2601. Where's my hammer? All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, let's see here. Where the heck are we? Appoint a budget officer, item 8B, for fiscal year 26-27.
Yeah, I know it seems like we just did this, and I know it still seems early in the process, but Rochelle has reminded me that this is about the time that we appoint the budget officer. This has to be done by motion and approved by the board. I already know who that budget officer is going to be, but it's a housekeeping issue. It's a formality that Rochelle was hoping that we could check off our list at this meeting.
I don't see why not. I'll move that we appoint John Wesley as our budget officer for fiscal year 26-27.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to appoint John Wesley as our budget officer for fiscal year 26-27. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried.
That was complicated.
Yeah, I hate these drums. Okay, last item up for bid. Adjustment to monthly board of directors payment. We've touched on this a couple of times before. We really didn't come to a conclusion. But I have here the Special District Board Member Handbook from SDAO. And I'll just read the section on compensation and expenses. ORS 198.190 allows districts to pay board members up to $50 per day as compensation for serving as a board member. Such compensation does not constitute the holding of a lucrative office. Districts need to withhold the appropriate taxes for any compensation given to a board member. Now, we haven't been doing that. I've never heard of it.
Well, you guys don't make enough to qualify
no.
yet.
And report this compensation on quarterly payroll tax rolls.
Right.
W-2 should also be issued at the end of the year. Districts may also reimburse board members for reasonable expenses incurred in performing official duties. We already have a policy about that.
Mm-hmm.
So my thinking is that when we have regular meetings, we have budget meetings, we have workshops, and training. Are the, if it takes some time out of your day on an official meeting, you should be compensated. And that's my basic feeling around. I spend an hour and a half or 2 hours going through the packets every day. Every time we come up, I don't think that should be compensated for. But meetings, workshops, training, especially SEO trainings, because they usually pay your bills or your meals. So, yeah. So on an average month, we're going to have, $50 each. And on an unusual month where we have maybe a training and a meeting or two meetings, it might make as much as $100.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
Oh, man. Anyway, I entertain a motion to raise honorarium for the work we do to $50. And I tried to research it a little bit. $20 figure originated when the water and sewer companies combined. Some, what would that be?
1998.
Oh. So, well, I think a little raise is in order.
Well, and before you guys, have an additional discussion or put it to a vote, in general, this is something I support. This is a token payment, but I believe even a token payment should be periodically adjusted. I think Tom's right. This has been unchanged for 27 years. I think it's past due. I guess my thought is, it was something for the board to think about. Should this be a flat rate per month, even if it's a little higher? Or should this be based on if you have a meeting, you get this, if you have a workshop, you get that? I guess I was thinking about this, and let me just throw this out to you as just kind of an outsider looking in. I don't think we want to give anybody the impression you're actually being compensated tit for tat for everything meeting you might go to or everything you might do. I if it was me, I'd be more comfortable with just saying 75 a month, and it's 75 a month, and it's just a flat rate. I don't know how the rest of the board feels about it, but is there a desire to not want to make this look like compensation or reimbursement on a per meeting basis? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
I like your idea, but there will come a time when we have just one meeting a month.
Yep.
And get that $75 or $100 or whatever, and that breaks the rule, because you can only give up to $50 a day according to ORS.
Okay. Okay.
So I would think the proper thing would be to do it per meeting.
Per meeting?
Yeah,
okay.
That would be great.
Okay, all right.
That's what the rule is, and that makes sense. Which was either way, it doesn't.
Well, not necessarily on that. I think you have to look at the administrative part of it, too. If we start doing tit for tat, as you use the term, then it puts a burden on the administrative part of the agency to say, well, Tom turned in a slip for this, or Duane turned in a slip, and now I got to make a note of that. And
she does it anyway.
She knows all that.
And when we go on, we pay for meals and gas and, travel. That's part of her job. She does it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I think it happens so seldom.
Right.
That it's really not a big chore for her. Yeah. I mean, we don't want to cause extra work for Rochelle. She works hard, we know that. But I don't think that we do enough meetings outside of the regular board meetings that it's a big issue.
Yeah, I do think, and whether this is a consideration or not, let me throw this out there, because I don't know what the limit is. But on a busy, but on a busy, you know, if it was a busy year, is it possible your total compensation could mean now you have to fill out a 1099, now you have to report it on your taxes?
Possibly.
Is that a consideration? I don't know.
I think possibly.
I receive $80 every quarter as a volunteer firefighter, and I get a 1099.
And you get a 1099. Yeah.
Isn't there, I thought it was a limit, $600 a year.
I know it used to be, but I don't know if that's changed.
Yeah, I don't either. That's last I heard, it was $600 a year.
Would we ask that question?
Certainly Department of Revenue would probably know. There's got to be something in today's world. You ought to be able to Google something.
But I'm just saying,
if that's a consideration, does it make a difference to anybody's thoughts about this? Administratively, this is not gonna be a burden no matter what. But I don't know what that limit is, and I don't know if that limit would have an impact on any decisions. And maybe it shouldn't. You know? Because we're all going to do our taxes anyway. If we send you a double W-2 at the end of the year, it's not a huge deal.
Not really.
It's not. So, this is just, I'm the peanut gallery at this point. So just a couple of thoughts on my end. But, I will say that in general, this is something I support. Because it has remained the same for so long. And I think a reasonable adjustment is warranted, and this is something I support. And I've supported this for a while. So I just want to make sure that the board knows that.
Well, I'd like to ask the board, would you like to wait till John has that question answered about W-2s, or?
No, I won't be here next month, and I just sent.
Oh, well, we're all here. Okay, that's a good idea. Yeah. So I'll entertain a motion then if you're interested.
I move that the stipend for board members to attend meetings, trainings, be increased to $50 per event.
Second.
I would include workshops and what was it? Training, workshops, meetings,
business meetings, budget meetings, special meetings.
Okay, just meetings, I guess. Okay.
Effective January 1st.
Okay, that's a little extra work for. Yeah,
but hey,
we have a motion and a second as amended. Did you, Max?
He seconded.
You seconded, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay.
Oh, that's a surprise.
It's so rich.
There was something on my mind. I spaced it. And we don't have any guests. Well, we do online. Does anybody have a comment?
Did I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
John, I would appreciate it if you would pass on our thanks to your staff out there in those horrible, rainy, nasty days. And I'd be driving by and see it, and they'd still be waving and smiling. And I think they did an amazing job during really nasty circumstances.
Well, thank you. And I will pass that along. You know how the weather on the coast is during the winter time, and the work doesn't end.
There's rain, and then there's weather. We had a few days.
You know, on that one day, and this was the worst day in a couple of years, and it's amazing how many people gave them an attaboy.
They do a great job, John.
That was by the library.
Yeah, it river on the other side of the road that comes down and then comes out by the hardware store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and that was a water leak that we had to do a boil water notice for because we had to kill the pressure. And, you know, I was there doing my best to help. I was knocking on doors and passing out door hangers or trying to put door hangers on door to let folks know that they did not answer the door, that there was a temporary boil water notice order in place. And after I was out there for 10 minutes, I just had to go back to the office and we called everybody because those door hangers were soaking so wet. They were blowing off the doorknob as soon as they put them on.
Yeah.
And so we abandoned the door hanger idea, which is usually the way we communicate to folks about this type of stuff.
Yeah, it works pretty good, too.
And we made personally called every single person on that road to tell them about it because those door hangers were not going to stay.
And haven't I seen the alert come through for other areas for boil water alerts?
Occasionally,
Tillamook
yeah.
County.
Yeah, yeah. We've looked at getting onto that, and last time we checked about doing that was about a year ago, and there was some reason why it wouldn't be compatible with us or our system or our mode of communication. But I've seen those before, and I like those because, shoot, it lets people know about it if you subscribe.
Yeah, you have to Nixle, you have to subscribe.
You know, it lets people know about these things, you know. I mean, shoot, people in Beaver or in, you know, Tillamook or Lincoln City, they get word about this, even if it's in Pacific City. And a lot of people live in Pacific City, but I don't work in Pacific City, so it's kind of a good notification. And we have had in the past a customer or two that expressed concerns that, well, shoot, I always come into the house through the garage door. I'd never go through my front door. I don't see the door hanger. And this would be another way just to get the word out because, you know, just for people that are in that situation. And it's just a precaution. You know, you lose pressure. If you lose pressure, that means that the water from homes can siphon back into the water main. Once it goes past the water meter, we don't want it back. You know, it's for reasons like that we're required to do a boil water notice as a precaution. It's not that we think there's anything wrong with the water, but if you lose pressure, you have to do it. You have to do it. If we maintain even a few pounds of pressure, we don't need to. But so many of our repairs involves cutting into a main line, cutting out a broken section, and you've got to depressure and drain the line in order to safely do that. And unfortunately, it means our customers are inconvenienced for a short time. But obviously, you can shower in the water and everything. You just don't want to drink it. You don't want to make coffee. You don't want to prepare food with it. We now have a test method that we get our bacteriological test back in 18 hours instead of 24, which means that in nearly every case, we can lift the boil water notice 6 hours earlier than we used to be able to. So, yeah.
All righty. Any other comments, directors? If not, it is now 6:17, and this meeting is adjourned.